Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson. Hey, Fred.
Hey, Carl.
Researching a subject that is near and dear to my heart, and I know it is to you as well.
Reliability?
No. It's an itty. Creativity.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Okay. I've got a probably 8 books on my bookshelf or bookshelves that relate to creativity because I've always been fascinated with it. My tendency as an engineer is to analyze problems. And I've always been fascinated with people that can think outside of the norms and draw outside the lines and, you know, stuff. And in my book, I did research on it, and that's where I got these books. And researched it enough because when you facilitate teams, you want to bring out the creativity in the mm-hmm. teams. Mm-hmm. So it definitely affects from an FMEA standpoint. And I think it affects from a reliability standpoint as well. In fact, I'm sure it does, because outside of merely analyzing a problem, you have to figure out what to do. In other words, sometimes getting to the root cause takes you on a creative path that's not purely A to B to C.
Oh, yeah,
and so it's
not,
just
yeah.
a fascinating subject. And to introduce it, I took out these books within the last week, and I went through about 4 of them to gain which books had the most knowledge for me that opened up more doors. And I've narrowed into one book that I'm going to explore further called, interestingly enough, Serious Creativity. So I just thought it'd be fun to talk about it in general, how it applies to reliability, and what some of our insights are into this broad subject of creativity.
Well, I have a whole pile of thoughts, but what it came immediately to my mind is my first engineering job. When I came out of the Army, I was hired as a shift supervisor in a factory. And so I had swing shift and managed that team and monitored workflow and looked for, did stuff like that. And the engineering manager had an opening. And he said, when I first interviewed for my position as a shift supervisor, he talked to me and he asked the same question to every candidate. He says, I have a on my table, he had like a desk in the middle of his room, kind of, or a big table that he could have meetings at, or he'd spread out or whatever he's working on. And he says, I'm going to imagine that I've bolted this pipe, vertical pipe that just fits a ping pong ball. And it's 18 inches tall and it's sitting in the middle of my table and it's bolted to the table. I'm going to give you 2 minutes to come up with as many ways as you can to get that ping pong ball out. And to make a long story short, I got up and opened up, I found a stick of gum, and he says, using anything that's in this office, you can do this with. So I threw his coat off, his door rack, and said, I can bend this wire and stick it through the ball and pull it out. I can do this, I can do that. I ended up with, in 2 minutes, I had over 40 ideas. Mm. I didn't fully develop them all. It was, chewing gum, get it in there, fill it with water, do this, do that. He said I was the first candidate of dozens and dozens that he interviewed that actually stood up and opened doors and drawers and, figured out a way with anything I touched how it could work to do this. And he said most people came in 2 minutes would come up with 2 or 3 ideas. And I was like over off the charts. And so he was looking for an opportunity to bring me into his engineering group because he understood the value of creativity. Now, I had no idea what he just gave me a challenge and I went for it, whatever, this is what I do. But it makes me think, Carl, and in that research and stuff, and I know that the book, people that write books about creativity, especially when called serious creativity, is they're probably saying it's a learned trait. I think it's just never left me. I think kids are inherently creative And then it, our schooling systems and everything else and our work management and supervising and everything kind of beats that out of you. You got to do what's safe, what's the process, do that. But I don't know what your take is on that.
If you could see me right now, you'd see my head is nodding with you. I completely agree. I'll share a story. There's a very creative organization called Odyssey of the Mind that started out a group of people under NASA that created this organization that is for children. So we're talking grade school children, middle school, high school children. And Odyssey of the Mind has projects that be basically semester-long projects. And the whole concept of this organization or this this group is to allow children a way to be very creative on solutions to projects. So they'll define a project. It could be a project that relates to vehicles. It could be a project that relates to mechanics. And there's different categories, art. And then the children have to solve it and come up with a solution and then present the solution at a competition. Mm-hmm. And no adult is allowed to have any input to the solution.
And that's the hard part, because the judges, and I've been on both sides of those kinds of things, not Odyssey of Mind, but our local tech museum did something very, very similar. And it's obvious when the kids are coached too much.
Yeah, it is. And I was a judge for 7 years. I was head judge in Arizona on Odyssey of the Mind on one of the programs. And the judging would be, the kids would be doing this. They do like 8 minute skits or whatever they're doing. And then afterwards we talk with them. Hey, what a great idea. Where'd this come up? Who came up with this? Or how'd you come up with that? You know, mm-hmm. And we're chatting. And of course, if they say, well, my dad and whatever, then that's that's a no go. But the people who coach the teams know the rules. And so they let the kids, and frankly, Fred, is the kids solve the problems often better than the adults do. Oh, yeah. So let me just share this story with you. I'm going back to the early 1980s at GM. There was this, before I knew about Odyssey of the Mind, there was this sign that said, a demonstration, Odyssey of the Mind, up in the auditorium. So you go up and it was over lunch. And so the auditorium was filled with a lot of people that were interested in this. And they had two tables up front. One table was for an Odyssey of the Mind team that was brought in, mm-hmm. and they were like fifth graders or sixth graders, and the other was empty, and they said, we need 20 years or more engineering veterans, raise your hand to volunteer. And so they got six people up, trotted up, and there's this little project that had to do with toothpicks and glue and some other common mm-hmm. things, rubber bands. And all that was sitting on the table, and they had video cameras on the table. And you had no time to talk about it ahead of time. They said, here's the rules. You're going to build something, da-da-da-da-da, and it has to be in certain – the idea was to build something of a certain size. And you have 8 minutes. And whoever has the best project at the end that accomplishes the objectives wins. Mm-hmm. And so they start the clock, and the engineers just started doing things right away. The kids were talking amongst each other, and they were doing nothing. And so they go, this is not good. Except after a few minutes, the kids then started putting it together, and they absolutely, totally slammed the engineers. And it was obvious. The engineers' project was falling apart, and the kids was not.
Yeah.
And so I got interested in Odyssey of the Mind, and you're so right that there's a natural tendency of young people, or basically children, to be very creative, and it goes downhill from there if they don't have the right educational system or the right support system.
Yeah,
and it can be recovered, and that's what I'm interested in, mm-hmm. is that inherent ability. What kind of skills can we work on as engineers to enhance a natural creativity that we have? How do we bring that out? What kind of exercises are appropriate. And that's what I've been reading
well,
about.
Well, one of the things, I mean, that, and I remember I'd taken a class years ago and it was on TRIZ, T-R-I-Z.
I remember TRIZ from TRIZ. Russia.
Yeah. And it was one of the just founding things about creativity is, as an adult, we often see a problem and we see it through one lens, just our initial view of this problem, and we either know how to solve it or we don't. And then we bounce across these little barriers that we've created for ourselves just because that's the way we're looking at it. And what Triz did is said, well, what if you look at the individual materials, go smaller? What if you look at it as part of a larger system? You know, look at it from a lens that where does this fit into something else? And maybe it's more obvious there. Look at it from the side, look at, change the frame of reference. But you have to be conscious about doing that. And that, I think, was the one of the takeaways I got on TRIZ, and it's obviously had a bunch of other stuff associated with it. But it's one of those things that it's become more innate with me is that as I see a problem, is that we have a failure analysis problem. And, well, you know, the symptoms is one piece of that. Another one is, well, what about the material sets or vendor issues or this, you know, what are the subcomponents? What are the contributing factors? Maybe this is the victim. Maybe it's not. I'd run through a whole series of different frame of references, essentially, in order to see it from many different angles. And then sometimes bringing a team together naturally brings these different frame of references, and that can spark creativity. But you can do that yourself. So that's one idea.
Yeah, you can. In fact, this book I'm reading right now on serious creativity, I'm about halfway done, written by Edward de Bono, and I'll put it in the show notes. He passed away this year, but he'd written 85 books on thinking and creative thinking, and has worked with tons of companies. But he talks about the evolution of our brains, and our brains were evolved to put things in patterns, mm-hmm. to understand the patterns of things. And that's very good for survival. And those existing patterns tend to have momentum. You tend to see things in the patterns that you've created or you've analyzed. But our brains are not evolved to think outside of that. So we tend to stay within certain patterns. Some people could call it ruts, mm-hmm. Because you create the ruts where things flow a little easier. And so his entire focus is what kind of exercises will teach us, like Triz you're talking about, to think outside of those patterns, to start looking at things differently.
There's what was the name of the book? Oh, now you got me thinking. Part of my problem is I have such a poor memory. I have to recreate solutions all the time. So I have to constantly be on my toes. But one of the steps, and one of them that I struggled with is, you know, recognizing that I was in ruts. I'm reading this book on creativity. And one step she did is recommended that you do morning pages, is write 3 pages longhand every morning as fast as you can. Nobody needs to read it. You could throw it away immediately, but write, dump your brain on the page.
Wow.
And just write.
Okay.
And it was shockingly effective at clarity through the rest of the day and just being able to, it was basically slowing your brain down because you're handwriting. And even though you're doing it as fast as you can, your internal voice is going much quicker and thinking about this and the right and this and that and the project and this meeting coming up and blah, blah, blah. And I just dumped. But the second thing she did is the one I struggled with was once a week, schedule an hour, do something you've not done before. And it was like, go to an art museum. If you're not an art museum kind of person, go to an art museum. If you've never tried a hats on in a nice fancy hat shop, go do that. You know, if you never had sushi before, go get sushi for lunch. It was broaden your experience by doing things that you deliberately are doing that you've not done before. And so take a pottery class, you know, pick up a paintbrush and try to do something artistic, or if you've never painted a room before, go do that over the weekend. Wow. I mean, it was every week, spend at least some time breaking the pattern.
It's fantastic, Fred. I think the good news on this is people say it all the time. I'm just not a creative person. The good news is you can be.
Yes.
And if you're deliberate about it, and that is really good news for engineers, because engineers tend to be analytical, but by deliberate techniques, you can balance the necessary analytical skills with more creative skills. And I was thinking back to when I wrote my FMEA book, I had a graphic. One's called divergent thinking, the other's convergent thinking. Mm-hmm. And the convergent thinking is where I lived for a lot of my life. And it's a typical engineer, which is you take your facts and you take the existing ideas that you have or others have, and you converge on the answer.
Right.
And so you can see these arrows going inward, right, and the answer's in the center. The divergent thinking is you stimulate new ideas, spontaneous, novel, and you stimulate, and where I'm going to have to change my approach a little bit, because I teach facilitation and I teach brainstorming, but in reading this book, brainstorming is good, but you can waste a lot of time if you do brainstorming along with deliberate exercises. You can get to the creative ideas faster. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very interested in that, those skills of combining brainstorming with a more deliberate activity to get to creativity in a faster way, to balance the analytical skills that are almost natural to engineers.
Yeah, it's funny to me is if you take electrical engineer and mechanical engineer and give them the same problem, they will come up with completely different solutions. The mechanical engineers will be mechanical in nature and so on. And I think part of creativity is being able, I wouldn't classify it as convergent or divergent thinking. It's being able to, using the trite conversation, the thing is think outside the box. It's to be able to draw experiences from completely non-related activities. Like I was, one of my very first reliability problems as a consultant was hot tubs. They had the siding they were putting on. There was the extruded polymer panels that were on the outside edges of these backyard sauna or jacuzzi things. And the problem they had is that in Arizona, especially in Phoenix, it got cold at night and it got really hot during the day, and these things would contract and expand and it would pull all the rivets and nails and staples and everything else they had on these things apart, and it would fall off. And I looked at it for like 30 seconds and said, well, why don't you just make a slot and put a bolt through it? It's what we do in woodworking to account for the amount of variation in dimension, because if it's the material's going to do what it's going to do. And they looked at me like, how did you know that? Because there are a bunch of polymer scientists and mechanical engineers and sauna, plumbers and everything else there. They knew how to build a sauna, but they didn't know how to account for, even though they knew there was this, coefficient of thermal expansion phenomena that was occurring. They had all the same facts I did, but not one of them had looked under the table in their office, big wooden table that had that feature. It allowed the wood to
move. They were stuck in their existing patterns.
Yeah.
And when I get this question a lot on facilitating teams, where the facilitator says, well, the subject matter expert on a particular topic, that's the one we should defer to. We should just listen to him. And I say, no, there's a power in teams, because that subject matter expert might have a blind spot. And well, even though someone it's else good.
Might, what do you mean might? I have not met one yet that didn't.
That doesn't happen, yeah. And so So the person who's not the subject matter expert in that particular topic may be able, like you did, come up with ideas that go up beyond the blind spot. And So people have to have a certain amount of humility to accept input from others. And sometimes the input's wrong, but every once in a while, it's right. Yeah. And so it's a very worthy exercise to stimulate that creative discussion.
Now, part of this whole discussion, though, about creativity, and you and I think, enjoy it, and you've obviously been studying it, and I've certainly been exposed to it and read a bunch of different stuff on it, is the name of that book still bother me. I'm not near my library, otherwise I'd go find it. But the notion is that as reliability engineers, we're often involved with finding problems or finding issues or seeing defects, looming potential problems like FMEA. We sit down and tell them how ugly their design is and how it'll never work. That's not what we're paid to do. I mean, we're paid to solve things. We're an engineer too.
Yeah.
And it's maybe it's pulling together a team, that electrical engineer, mechanical engineer, and saying, hey, there's a problem. Here's the what we know and don't know. Let's brainstorm some ideas here. And you can contribute. It's not out of your domain to solve problems. But how do you set up a test fixture? How do you analyze what failure mechanisms really at play here? A lot of that involves a healthy dose of creativity and curiosity, I would say also. But that's why it's important. I think to be a effective engineer, you have to have a creative mind. It's just, and reliability is no different than the other engineering fields.
Yeah, and really the takeaway for me on a lot of this is you need both. You need the analytical skills, mm-hmm. the outside-in thinking skills that gets you to solve problems. You need creative skills as well. And the holistic approach is the best approach. And the good news, and what I'm really excited about, is you can learn these things. Because you think, okay, that person's just got an innate creativity, this artist, you know, that type of thing. You can actually work on it and improve your ability to think outside the norms, to think outside those patterns, and become a more effective engineer as a result.
Yep.
And I'm trying to think of who's the discoverer of the X-ray. I'm sorry, I'm just having a little blind spot right here.
What's her name? Didn't she?
Marie.
I want to say Antoinette, but I think that was the wrong Marie.
So a little blind spot there. It'll come to me in a minute. But I was watching a documentary on this person. And what one of the takeaways from the documentary is discoveries often happen by accident.
If you're willing to see what's going on.
Exactly. The accident happens and the person sees, well, I wonder how that happened. And they start looking about it and you know, lifting up the covers and going behind and pulling on the string. And they get, they learn so much. And so that's the point, is you have to have your mind open to discovering things, to listening to things, to thinking differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a lot of these great inventors can do, is their mind is open.
Yeah.
And they ask questions.
I saw a quote years ago, and I'm not sure who it was by, but it was, you know, you have to have an open mind, but not so open that your brain falls out. And yeah. I thought of the book you mentioned, Artist, and it's the Artist Way, and I have no idea who it's by, but it's an older book, and it's full of exercises to help anybody become very creative. It's a wonderful book, The Artist Way.
Wonderful. Marie Curie. It just came to me.
Marie Curie.
Okay, yeah. So there we got that one.
Hey, where memories are working.
and there's another history documentary that I've been reading is Leonardo da Vinci. It's a book by Walter Isaacson.
Oh, yeah, I read that.
And there's another person who's extremely creative but very analytical.
Yep.
So I think it's just so exciting that both of those skills, you don't have to pick one or the other.
Mm-mm.
You can actually pursue a path that has both of them.
Yeah, no, that was a wonderful book. I highly recommended. Anything by Isaacson, I found, has been just so well done.
Oh, yeah. His book on Einstein, I still draw on it.
Oh, wow. I haven't read that one yet. I did Steve Jobs. He did a biography on him. Mm-hmm. I believe he did one on Benjamin Franklin. Talk about another creative genius.
Yeah. Oh,
grief. That guy was prolific. But yeah, and then the Da Vinci one was fascinating, absolutely fascinating.
My takeaway from the Einstein book is, because Einstein had a very difficult life. In other words, lots mm-hmm. of things went wrong in his personal relationships and everything else. But he was a screaming genius in this area
mm-hmm.
of physics and mathematics. And so the takeaway is a person can be really good in one thing, but not necessarily good in something else.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't automatically transfer that genius.
No, definitely doesn't. Yeah. No, all right.
Let me just tap into our readers or listeners. If you have some ideas on creativity and how we can bring this subject into our engineering field and specifically our reliability engineering field, please let us know. We'd like to explore this further.
And you can find our SpeakPipe widget over at ascendoreliability.com/go. And you can leave us essentially a voicemail, and we could include that with a future episode. But we actually get to hear you. That's really cool. There's also a contact form there. You can send us written comments. You can find Carl and I, the other hosts, out on LinkedIn or through our About pages and contact information there. There's lots of ways to get in touch, and we'd love to have you join the conversation.
Very good.
Right. Thanks, Carl. Well, I'm going to do something creative today because we're hooking up our generator today. I have to go call a gas company to get the propane to line up to it. The electrician's here today running the wires for the house and transfer switch. So we've got an expensive, all-bite creative solution to power outages. Just create our own power.
And you'll have some long-term power.
We hope so, as long as the propane lasts. We never know. But anyway, talk to you later, Carl. Thanks so much.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.